The proto-Zionist story that Eliot gave the world existed before Herzl and, as Lebrecht writes, it helped inspire Herzl, as well as others in the Zionist movement. But as Lebrecht notes, very few know of the man that it inspired, George Eliot. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 155, The Inspiration of George Eliot. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. In the late 1860s, a man named Emanuel Deutsch visited Jerusalem. It would seem to be a simple visit, but with the hindsight of history, we know that it was not. For this man was already friends with a non-Jewish English author by the name of Marianne Evans, who under the pseudonym of George Eliot published famous books such as The Mill on the Floss and ultimately Middlemarch. And this man would serve as George Eliot's inspiration for a novel named Daniel Deronda, one of the most important books in the history of Zionism. There's no question that Marianne Evans's relationship with religion was incredibly complicated. She was raised in a religious home and came to be estranged from the faith of her father. Supposedly, according to books about her, George Eliot said something to the effect of that of the three concepts God, immortality, and duty, she considered the first inconceivable, the second unbelievable, and the third peremptory and absolute. And yet, we know that even as George Eliot was finishing up Middlemarch, she had begun work on another novel, Daniel Deronda, a tale of a young man, adopted, who falls in love with a Jew named Mira Lapidoth, who gets to know her brother, a proto-Zionist named Mordechai, and who ultimately finds out that he too is Jewish. He marries Mira and moves to the Holy Land to work for Mordechai's dream. This is an incredible book, and I urge all of you, if you have not yet done so, to enrich yourselves by listening to Ruth Weiss's incredible lecture series about the novel, available on the Tikva website. Daniel Deronda, as a story, could not be more different than Eliot's earlier novel, Middlemarch, which was about Gentiles living in a provincial town, while Deronda was about the mystery of the history and religion of the Jewish people. Middlemarch was an examination of English life, while Deronda required Eliot to engage in research regarding all of Jewish history. And as Eliot worked out the plot of her new novel, it is clear that she was deeply engaged by the mystery of the Jewish story and the Jewish faith. This means that her work marked not only a literary shift, but also a religious one. The great historian of Victorian England, Gertrude Himmelfarb, wrote the following in her book, The Jewish Journey of George Eliot, quote, "It is not known when Eliot made her famous pronouncement that God was inconceivable, immortality unbelievable, and duty nonetheless peremptory and absolute. If Middlemarch may be read as a secular testament to the idea of duty, her next and last novel, Daniel Deronda, represented something of a return to an Old Testament, with faith in the service of duty. For Deronda, duty was still peremptory and absolute, but God was no longer inconceivable. Eliot had Daniel Deronda in mind even before she completed Middlemarch, the first of her several notebooks on Jewish subjects dated from the summer of 1872. And Himmelfarb adds, "A year later she reported to her publisher, 'I am slowly simmering towards another big book, but people seem so bent on giving supremacy to Middlemarch that they are sure not to like any future book so well.' That simmering, which had been going on for well over a year, consisted of a massive work of research into Jewish learning and lore. Eliot's notebooks for this period contain excerpts from the Bible and prophets, the Mishnah and Talmud, Maimonides, medieval rabbis and Kabbalistic works, as well as contemporary German scholars, Moses Mendelssohn, Heinrich Gretz, Moritz Steinschneider, Leopold Zuns, Abraham Geiger, Abraham Berliner, Emmanuel Deutsch, French scholars, Ernest Renan, Yasuda Bedarid, Georges Depping, Salomon Munk," end quote. This means that even as Eliot was finishing Middlemarch, she was addressing the mystery of the Jews. And what seems to have inspired her reflections about the Jewish people was one Jew in particular. As both Gertrude Himmelfarb and Norman Lebrecht have described, the inspiration for this novel came from a Jewish figure of whom few have heard, whom George Eliot had gotten to know. As Himmelfarb writes, quote, "The decisive event in Eliot's initiation into the Jewish question was her meeting in 1866 with Emanuel Deutsch, an assistant in the library of the British Museum. Born in Silesia, educated by his uncle, a rabbi and Talmudic scholar, before going on to the University of Berlin, Deutsch came to England in 1855 at the age of 26, a living embodiment, one commentator has it, of Matthew Arnold's ideal union of Hebraism and Hellenism. Deutsch himself recalled his youth when Homer and Virgil stood side by side on my boyish bookshelf with the Mishnah and the Midrash," end quote. A fascinating description of Emanuel Deutsch is given by Norman Lebrecht in his book, Genius and Anxiety, and I cite a bit of it here. Quote, a Talmudist from Silesia, recommended to the museum by a Berlin bookseller. Deutsch is fluent in all Indo-European and Middle Eastern languages. He is a walking encyclopedia, a workaholic bachelor who shares his £300-a-year salary, around $40,000 in 2019 values, with his parents back home and earns extra money writing for reference works, 190 entries in Chambers' encyclopedia, others in Smith's Dictionary of the Bible, end quote. As both Lebrecht and Himmelfarb describe, Deutsch taught Jewish studies to Marianne Evans and provided the foundation for the information about Judaism that would ultimately be part of her novel. But, as Lebrecht describes, Deutsch was a sickly man. Eliot visited him and encouraged him in his time of great pain, and Deutsch also had a dream. Thus, we are further told by Himmelfarb the following, quote, in 1869, Deutsch visited Palestine for the first time and experienced something of an epiphany. His first letter was dated, the East, all my wild yearnings fulfilled at last. At a lecture at the Royal Institution in London upon his return, he spoke eloquently of the Jewish faces with, quote-unquote, their 1,000 years of woe written in them, leaning against the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem. The destiny of, quote-unquote, the once proscribed and detested Jews, he concluded, was, quote-unquote, not yet fulfilled. In his weekly visits with Eliot and Luz, Himmelfarb further writes, he conveyed his passion and some of his learning as well. He tutored Eliot in Hebrew, introduced her to ancient Jewish sages and modern Jewish scholarship, and spoke eloquently of his vision of national redemption in Palestine, end quote. Deutsch died soon afterwards, and he is unquestionably George Eliot's inspiration for Mordechai, the sickly but brilliant individual who inspires Daniel Deronda in the novel. The proto-Zionist story that Eliot gave the world existed before Herzl, and, as Lebrecht writes, it helped inspire Herzl, as well as others in the Zionist movement. But, as Lebrecht notes, very few know of the man that it inspired, George Eliot. Thus, Lebrecht reflects about the legacy of Daniel Deronda as follows, quote, the novel appears quickly in German, French, Italian, Dutch, Russian, and Yiddish. The Hebrew translation, by David Frischman, cuts out the Gwendolyn section to accentuate the Deronda bits. A rabbi's son notes that Daniel Deronda turned our hearts to Eretz Israel. David Ben-Gurion cites the novel as a prime cause of a future Jewish state. Theodore Herzl reads it on the eve of the First Zionist Congress. His aide Nachum Sokolow writes that Daniel Deronda paved the way for Zionism. The word Zionism does not exist in George Eliot's lifetime, nor for decades after her death. It is coined by a Galician, Nathan Birnbaum, and acquires political force at Herzl's First Congress in 1897. 20 years later, in the Balfour Declaration, the British government endorses Zionist aims. And Lebrecht, a bit later, concludes, streets are named after George Eliot in Israeli cities. The boulevard that runs from the Tel Aviv town hall down to the sea is named Frischmann, after Daniel Deronda's translator. Nothing is named after Emanuel Deutsch, the scholarly spark that lit the Zionist flame. End quote. Lebrecht's words are striking. And reading them, I pondered how new meaning was given to the final words of George Eliot's earlier book, Middlemarch. The book concluded by describing Dorothea Brooke, a woman who had not achieved her dreams. George Eliot wrote, quote, her finely touched spirit had still its fine issues, though they were not widely visible. Her full nature, like that river which Cyrus broke the strength, spent itself in channels which had no great name on the earth. But the effect of her being on those around her was incalculably diffusive. For the growing good of the world is partly dependent on unhistoric acts, and that things are not so ill with you and me as they might have been is half owing to the number who lived faithfully a hidden life and rest in unvisited tombs. End quote. Eliot is speaking about humble impacts in life, but the truth is that we have no idea how a seemingly small impact can become a huge one. And that is the story of Emanuel Deutsch. For if we live our lives wisely and well, we have no idea how providentially our lives can ultimately impact others. Middlemarch concludes by reflecting about the goodness of ordinary life. Daniel Deronda, not only the novel but its backstory, reflects the extraordinary nature of the Jewish people, the mystery and miracle at the heart of its history. Taken together in tandem, the two novels capture as one the statement made by Milton Himmelfarb, Gertrude Himmelfarb's brother, immediately after the Six-Day War. He wrote, quote, each Jew knows how thoroughly ordinary he is, yet taken together we seem caught up in things great and inexplicable. The number of Jews in the world is smaller than a small statistical error in the Chinese census, yet we remain bigger than our numbers. Big things seem to happen around us and to us, end quote. The story of Emanuel Deutsch is another chapter in the story of the wondrous city of a miraculous people, one to which a brilliant non-Jewish author in England gave powerful and eloquent testimony. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.